Welcome back to Following Noah Dawn, a Stormlight podcast. This week is chapters 41 through the epilogue of The Sunlit Man by Brandon Sanderson. Paul, how are you?
Well, Trevor, in case you've forgotten, Elliot and I are now, I think we've officially, have we graduated? Is that where we are? We graduated from Brandon Sanderson University. We finished all of our coursework.
Yeah.
We are Cosmere current for a little bit, for like a couple weeks.
Yeah, I was going to go look at the calendar.
Yeah, we are Cosmere current for a couple weeks, and we are, you know, is this us defending our thesis? I don't know. That may be a different episode.
Almost 4 full weeks, you are Cosmere current. Almost 4 full weeks.
It's a great feeling. It's like, for us, it's a bit different. It's not really a sigh of relief. It's like getting to the top of a huge mountain and being like, wow, I'm so proud that I made it. But then having to walk 6 miles back downhill, you know.
The downhill part is always the easy one. You don't have to worry.
That is true. That is the easy part. Maybe this is, but for the context of this, we're not talking about ease. We're just talking about, we get a nice little break, but we still have a lot of mileage to go after our reprieve. But we get a moment to celebrate and be excited. We finished the book. Really excited to talk about the rest of this book with y'all.
Elliot, how are you?
There's such a bittersweetness to these kinds of moments. I think the English language doesn't even have quite the right word for it. There's this triumph of finishing not just one book, like Paul, you said mountain or university studies. Like that's accurate. We finished like 17 books or something like that at this point. That's a monumental accomplishment that feels really good. And then you're like, but now there's no more for 4 weeks until we get another one, which is excellent timing. And I'm very excited for it, but almost like a bittersweet triumph somehow.
It's that specific feeling you get when watching The Lord of the Rings at the Grey Havens, where you're like, it's so hard to describe, but you're like, wow, that was awesome. I'm sad. I'm happy. I'm fulfilled. There's so many things you can say about it. But yes, we have finished The Sunlit Man. We will be discussing that this week. And then doing our wrap up probably this week as well. It'll probably be out tomorrow, the same way I did Tress, but maybe not. So you guys will find out tomorrow, I guess, if that's true. So let's roll intro, and then we will get a brief summary from Elliot on how The Sunlit Man ends. All right, Elliot, the most recent published Cosmere work ends how?
It ends. Well, the beginning of the end starts with Nomad, who has been freshly renamed Zellion, leads the City of Beacon in a full-out attack on the Cinder King. Guns blazing, they come tearing in, scare him off. He makes a run for the refuge. They follow him. That was part of the plan. Zellion wanted to kind of spook him, make him think, oh, I got to go protect the refuge. He does fall for it, goes to it. They follow him. They find the Skadrian science ship that has been sitting underneath the ground, observing things, doing their science, kind of ignoring the world around them, sort of. And Zellion Yes, sort of. We got to talk about it. The Zellion does even manage to convince them to let them in. So Zellion and a few other people get to go onto the ship. They talk with the Skadrians. They learn a little bit of information, and they refuse to help. And so everyone but Zellion gets basically kicked back off the ship, back into the clutches of the Cinder King. Zellion has a bottom of the abyss moment where he momentarily abandons his friends and decides not to help them, that he's just going to move on to the next planet, continue on with his life of running from the Night Brigade. But then on the ship, he's overhearing some of the Skadrians do their work, and he learns how to recharge sun hearts. And he realizes how earth-shattering this is, how groundbreaking this is, how much this would change the lives of everyone living on Canticle. And that, mixed with some other things that we'll talk about, causes him to change his mind, burst out of the ship, go to save Beacon at the cost of some things, which we'll have to talk about in complete depth. He does save the city of Beacon. In the process, Rebecca is captured by the Cinder King. Zellion ends up getting captured by the Cinder King. The Cinder King puts some handicapping metal mines on him and has him duel with the Cinder King and Zellion. They do so. Elegy saves Rebecca from becoming a chard, just barely. Rebecca is then able to kind of have some control over the chard, and her and Elegy are both able to convince the people to abandon the Cinder King. Zellion is able to fight the Cinder King off of the city. Rebecca and Elegy fly the city away from them. Zellion grabs hold of him, sucks all of his investiture, skips off the planet, and rides off into the sunset.
And they all live happily ever after.
Or something.
At exactly 31 miles per hour on average, just away from the sun.
Constantly.
Constantly. All right, Paul. Where do we start?
We start by pointing out that my battery theory was correct.
Congratulations.
Very good.
Thank you. I don't know if you've caught the comments on our first episode of this book, but you have had some warm congratulations for theories well theorized. So congratulations on that.
You know, it's just nice to win one. I will take it while I can. A little pat myself on the back. I really thought outside the box, and I'm really proud. Aside from that, I'm open to talk about whatever we'd like. You know, we kind of enter. I feel like this book was a bit different. I'm curious to know what y'all think. But plot-wise, it was a bit of a Sanderlanch in that a lot of the stuff comes down to the very last moment. Like, really the last, like, couple last moments are when things happen. But it wasn't, I don't know. Do y'all think this was similar or different from the other, like, Sanderlanch end of the books? To me, it felt different, but it did also really come down to the last second. Like, I really didn't feel like the book was ending or wrapping up until it was done. So
yeah,
I guess it really did fit the classic Sanderlanch. Everything is done at the end. Trope.
But that was kind of the case. Yumi did the same. Yumi had a fake epilogue where I got Yumi spoilers. Yumi had two epilogues, one fake one and one real one, where Yumi dies, and then the second epilogue, Yumi's alive. So
that is true. I will say that the narrative plot of what was happening in Yumi was kind of the final little battle scene,
right?
Where everyone is ready and defending against the nightmares. And that, it's been a minute since we've read that book, but in my head that happens a bit, not early, definitely not early. It is like the very end, but you know, you kind of have that going on for a little while. There's a bit of suspense. This kind of felt like it was, I mean, there was definitely suspense, but then it's like instantly the result and then end book. However, we don't have to start with the very ending. So we could talk about the discovery of the that sun hearts can be recharged.
Yeah.
While I understand that that can happen, I didn't fully understand how it works. Is it essentially like they just kind of bury it under the ground a little bit because the core is invested?
So, okay. Elliot, maybe you can help with this, but Zellian describes it as a light bulb. And the idea of a light bulb, you need to resist the current passing through it a little bit to light up the light bulb and give off heat, but the current is still passing through it because otherwise it's just a wire and you're not losing any investiture, for example. So in order to charge the battery that you have down, you need to resist the current a little bit, put in something to resist the investiture, and then it charges it.
Yes. That was my take on it, for sure. Like, that's why, part of why I think when a person steps into this crazy flood of investiture, that person is a lot of resistance to that investiture because they have other investiture in them that you like instantly burn up because that incredibly powerful deluge of investiture is fighting against you and overwhelms you fast. Whereas apparently the spent sun hearts have no resistance to that investiture. It just is kind of like a clear window. It's just going to pass right through it and nothing happens. But you need that filament, that little bit of resistance to catch some of that investiture, to fight against it enough so that it has to burn into the object. And that's why putting into the sun heart some heat from a person from Canticle does it, apparently.
Which, this plot aside, Skadrians now have access to seemingly unlimited investiture.
Potentially.
Which seems kind of important in this arms race that gets mentioned offhand by Zellian. So, just real quick, Zellian makes an internal dialogue comment that it's been a couple hundred years since he's seen the people he is close to, presumably Bridge 4. So, fast forward however long that is, get an official timeline later. The Cosmere is apparently in an arms race, and there are Skadrian scientists here observing the planet, ignoring the plight of Beacon, the Sinner King. They don't really care. All they're here is to do some science experiments, and they've apparently found like a full sun's worth of investiture that they now can harness with your battery thing, Paul. So it would seem the Skadrians are ahead of our Rosharans.
I've never necessarily thought of our Rosharans as being leaders in a technology race. It's probably because we've only seen Era 1 of Stormlight.
Right.
And we've seen multiple eras of others or more futuristic places. So maybe that's unfair. However, I've never thought of them as the technology gurus. They've got some neat stuff going on with Fabrials, but that's not the case. It's always like Skadriel or forget the name of the planet for Elantris.
Cell.
Cell. But it's Skadriel or Cell usually bouncing around with the new tech. Seems like, or something creative and Cosmere-y.
And the Nalthians. Throw the Nalthians in there too, that's because true. There's some like iPads that show up on Tress from Nalthus that seem out of context.
And that was kind of my question after that arms race comment was, I'm very curious who the major players are.
Yeah.
I think Zellian thinks to himself, ooh, all the major players are in an arms race. I was like, well, who? I wonder who they are. Skadriel, obviously. Cell, Nalthus, Tal'Dane, Yolin, like who are the big, you know, geopolitical heavyweights out there in the Cosmere?
What's the password that he uses to get into the Skadrian
ship? Is it?
Do you remember?
I don't remember. No.
He uses a treaty, a Silverlight treaty, and he calls upon it to gain access to this, to gain temporary access to the starship. So that tells you something. That tells you that Silverlight, we haven't been there really, but we know Silverlight is a city in the cognitive realm where that Chris lives in, and she hops around to do her observations, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the Skadrians recognize Sigzil as a Rosharan. And so presumably Roshar is in there too, that they are aware of this intergalactic treaty and use it.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. Not the Silverlight bit, actually, although because that is extremely important. Yes, I agree. The Rosharan bit. These guys like immediately recognize that he's Rosharan, and they fire off a bunch of questions at him. And yep. The types of questions that they ask are actually, I think, maybe a bit revealing. They're trying to figure out what languages he speaks, and he pretends not to understand their language, which is a trick he's already used. Do you remember this? At the beginning of the book, he pretends not to be connected so that he can listen in on our beacon characters. Maybe he's doing a little bit of the same thing again. He's like, they say, do you speak Malwish? He's like, do I speak what? Huh? And it specifically says like he's lying in there. He does speak Malwish.
Yep.
So infer from just that.
Real quick for our listeners, Paul, do you remember who the Malwish are?
Yes. And Mistborn Era 2, they're the super tech advanced people who come in, and one of them ends up dating or romantically invested with Maracy. Is it?
Correct.
Yes, they have a spaceship, and everyone's like, what the heck?
Carry on, Elliot.
I infer from that Zellion has been to Skadrial. They also then ask him, are you oathed? Which is a weird way to phrase that. But
yeah,
apparently they're asking him, are you a Knight Radiant? Because later on, he like slips up and he starts talking to Auxiliary. And the one like scientist goes, wait, you said you weren't oaths. Who are you talking to? And that's kind of a strange question. Almost as if they would not take him on if he was a Knight Radiant.
Yes.
Why is that?
Interesting.
Then they already seem to know, or it's immediately apparent or implied, that he has a shard blade. And so like they want to hire him because of that. Oh, you have a blade. But they specifically refer to it as capital B blade. And if you think about this for a second, they just asked him, are you oathed? He says no. And they're like, oh, okay, but you have a blade. Oh, that's really cool. Let's hire you. Well, hang on a second. They're smarter than we are. They're smarter than we are. They know all this stuff here. If you don't have a spren, but you have a blade, what do you have? You have an honor blade.
Or... better question. No. I was with you until that last part. You don't have an honor blade. You have a dead spren.
Okay.
You have a classic shard blade, Way of Kings style.
So they're asking, do you have an alive spren?
Correct.
Is essentially what they're trying to get at.
Yes.
Okay.
So, but that makes me think that... Let's stay there for a second. That makes me think that there are a lot of dead spren around. And I'm like, oh, that's concerning.
Well, yes, very concerning. And for other reasons, I think we've talked about other books, I'm rather worried about Roshar in general. But
yeah,
they're also that now there must be a live spren still also, or they wouldn't be asking the question of, do you have an alive spren? Are you oathed?
And then presumably, like the first point you said, maybe the Knights Radiant are overtly against Skadrial in this arms race, but then maybe some mercenaries off Roshar aren't. that just have normal shard blades. Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, this did get me thinking, because you're right. We haven't ever seen a shard blade not on Roshar. This is the first and only time, right?
Yes. I mean, it depends on who you talk to, but yes.
Okay.
A blade of honor, capital H honor, yes.
Okay, I'm going to not worry about that, but I'm just going to continue.
I'm talking about Nightblood.
Okay, gotcha. Yes, Nightblood is different. Not talking about Nightblood. I almost specified that, but I was like, Nightblood, who knows? Anyways, yeah, this is most notably, like, I didn't think about that, honestly, until we were talking about it, but that's like the one thing we don't just see around. We don't see anybody popping up anywhere else, pulling out a shard blade, you know, anything like that. Like, this is pretty unique. I mean, we understand, like, you know, how or why Sigsel could have one. Obviously, he has auxiliary here. Like, you know, that's what we see. But, I mean, like, is this, like, you know, he is a bit different with this whole skipping thing and all these things. Like, it's not normal for people to have shard blades off of Roshar, right?
Correct.
Is he breaking the rules, or is that like we just haven't seen it conveniently?
Yeah, okay, so headcanon time. It's been explicitly told to us that Spren can't leave Roshar, or at least not far. That they cannot function away from Roshar. They have connection issues if they separate from Honor.
Okay.
That being said, Zellion specifically, all the rules get thrown out the window. Cause we've just been told the Dawn Shard just like severed everything and burned away a bunch. So presumably you can have a dead blade off Roshar based on what Scadrial just asked him. The Scadrians just asked him. And then auxiliary is breaking the rules because he was injured by the Dawn Shard and maybe severed his connection. That's my idea here.
I still feel like the asking of the question, are you oathed, implies that there can be Knights Radiant with an alive Spren off of Roshar at this point.
At this point, yes. But when it comes to Stormlight Era 1,
right,
we've been told no.
Right.
Right. So there's that distinction.
Yes. So yeah, some interesting contextual bits for what's going on in the larger cosmos here, which I'm very intrigued by.
Yeah.
All that aside, here down in our story, these Scadrians are not very nice. They don't care one bit about the people on this planet. They're just here for the science. They talk about how, oh yeah, we already nabbed a few of the locals to use as test subjects. And what? Help these people? What do you think we are? A charity? No way. It's like, okay. They're specifically called neutral in the conflict of all things, but I'd be pretty fast to chalk them up as all you care about is your science and not about people at all.
Right. So the way that they read it in the audiobook is it's from Zellion's perspective, and Zellion says, these are the time tellers, which makes them technically neutral, quote unquote, in this arms race. But it's obviously a Scadrian organization, so if they're going to fall anywhere, it would be with the Scadrians, which is, if you're reading between the lines, it seems to be against Roshar. So when do we get to see that? Maybe never, but I don't know.
Did you guys notice that in the chapter, it's like maybe a chapter and a half, where Zellion briefly abandons the people of Beacon. He decides he's going to let them go. He's going to stay. He's going to steal the door that's sitting on the table, not the like walk-through door, the mm-hmm. jar of investiture door that he sees.
The Elantrian door.
Yes.
The D.O.R.
which still apparently seems to be like a super convenient way to take your investiture around, since we've been seeing a lot of that.
I was actually going to mention that there's still a conspicuous lack of Stormlight for all we've been told is super convenient. They're still using Door.
Yeah. Door seems way more, maybe Sun Hearts are going to be like the new easy way to carry some investor around. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Where was I going with that? Oh, the name. Did you notice his name in his own head changes back from Zellion to Nomad?
Yes. As he's breaking the bond to Canticle. Yes.
He no longer thinks about himself as Zellion. He thinks about himself as Nomad for about a chapter and a half.
I did notice that.
I did not pick that up. That is really clever.
And I think Auxiliary even calls him a different name and then recalls him Zellion in the next chapter.
I think so. And then when he bursts out of the ship and goes to save Beacon, he's immediately back to Zellion.
That's such a great chapter. Let's move towards Auxiliary. If you guys are done,
what comes next?
If you guys are done with the Skadrians, I want to read a quote, which is basically the whole page, the whole last page of chapter 45. So get comfortable. Zellion, Auxiliary said, "You'll need to fly to reach them." "I can't," he shouted. I can't, Aux. I've tried." "You're a better man than you pretend to be," Auxiliary said. "Even still, even broken as you are. I'm just a fool, a callous fool. We both know that isn't true. Because the smart thing to do, the callous thing, would have been to attack Beacon the moment you got to it. Steal the Sun Hearts, leave their ships stranded. But you didn't." No, he hadn't. Because whatever he said, he was still a man and not a monster. "Zellion, my friend, you are worth saving." He started crying as he ran. "When you reach them," Auxiliary said, "make sure they know the secret. Make sure you save them, Zellion. Listen to me. Listen. I can give you a little burst of power like we discussed." "No, I'll use the power from the Sun Heart." "And will that make you fly again?" "I will make you what you were for a short time. I am the leftover strength of oaths sworn. I am the truth you once knew. Take it again for the briefest time. And soar." "I will burn away only myself," Auxiliary said. "My personality. That should leave you with my body, the weapon, to still use. This is my destination, but not yours." "You can't do this, Aux, please. You don't get to decide. I know about consequences. I understand that you betrayed your oaths. But here's the thing, Zellion. Here's what you never have understood. I also swore to be better than I was. I became a Knight Radiant. I spoke the words. And whatever you did, I never betrayed my oaths. You protect those people, Zellion. I've carried you as far as I can. You'll have to find the rest of the way on your own."
And imagine that scene as the sun is rising behind him. He's running like as fast as he can through like these fast growing plants. And I can clearly imagine the visual of him, you know, crying out this conversation with Aux as he's running towards a dawn that is coming faster than he can run. And just that impending sense of urgency as this whole thing is happening, like, oh man, what a scene.
It is a really, really glorious scene. You know what this gives me? A fear and a hope for. So I don't know. Something really hits me with the Spren, like, sacrifice. Like Auxiliary making this choice, right? It's very meaningful. It hits really hard. And it can't make me... I don't have any specific theory or specific like moment of saying this might happen, but Stormlight 5, I'm sure there's going to be some, you know, notable moments between Spren and their, you know, bonded Radiant, and it's just I'm preemptively getting emotional about it, even though that's fully a theory. Who knows what will happen? It's hitting me here. Yeah, this is a really fantastic scene.
And some of the parts in there that I skipped, as Zellian is making, or as Auxiliary is making this sacrifice, the his tone of voice begins to come back, and he begins to heal himself with his own oath that he's giving up. Like, that's so cool, and such a cool little detail to include. That's, I don't know.
Do you know what that made me think of? It made me think of Elokar, like that brief redemption moment right before the death. It's like, oh, it makes it even more like gut-wrenching, and that for a brief second you're like, wait, Aux is coming back, and then Zellian has to go on without him after this scene.
Yeah. And something else that is kind of just dawning on me now, it really does put a cool weight behind our oaths for our Knights Radiant, because this can prove that, or that this gives credence to that the oaths that you can hold as a Knight Radiant are stronger than even the Dawn Shards. The Dawn Shards are what have done this to Auxiliary, and the fact that they're fighting against this torment, capital T torment, this whole book, and winning by the end of this book with Knight Radiant oaths. That's really cool to put that much weight on some ideals. I think that's really cool.
And Sigzil, I'll use that name because I think it's relevant in this context. He knows that too. He knows the importance of an oath. If you remember back in the beginning, that's like the moment he chooses to stick around and fight, is when the Cinder King violates an oath. He says like, oh yeah, let's parley. I won't. I promise. I swear I won't hurt you. And then he turns around and like attacks him. And Nomad goes, and that's the moment where I'm going to now take you down, because you just made an oath and you violated it. Like, that's core to who he is you make an oath, you hold it. Like, he knows the power of that. Like you just described, potentially the power over like objects of the power of Dawn Shards.
Yeah. If Brandon can write such a good emotional scene about a Spren that we've known for 300 pages, what are we in for?
Oh no.
What are we in for Wind and Truth?
See, that is what I was thinking of. And I think we have a lot of added significance because we understand what the relationship can be like between a Radiant and their Spren. You know, I think yeah, there's some added significance. I think if you picked this book up, which once again, I don't recommend doing this as your first Cosmere book, but I think if you picked this book up and you hadn't read Stormlight, first off, you'd have way more questions than this, but I don't think this would hit the same. I don't think it would make sense. I don't think, you know, you don't have the context of bonding a Spren, growing together, the ideals of the Knights Radiant, you know, progressing through the different levels of ideals. You know, it really is a journey with your Spren, just the relationship you have between your Spren, not talking about the journey that you as a person are going on in the physical realm. You know, your bond with your Spren is of itself probably a journey. You know, I've been rereading, you know, trying to prepare for Stormlight 5, and, you know, rereading in Words of Radiance, and you see pattern as, and also whenever you see Syl in The Way of Kings, practically like non-vocal. Like, it's almost like,
yeah,
it's almost like a young child who can't like fully express their thoughts or feelings or things like that, you know? And then growing and maturing to a point where they're able to, you know, it's like two adults having a conversation, you know, very intelligent, you know, they know each other very well. It's like it's a miniature version of like a lifelong best friend. And miniature isn't the right word. It's like you're there through not the Spren's whole life, because they've been around for a long time. It's a bit complicated. But it's yeah, it's just a very progressive relationship that happens with a lot of growth and a lot of development. And so there's just a lot of significance there. So I think that's why it really hits home. And I think that's a really, really unique aspect that this book has been able to do, is channel some of that from Stormlight into a completely different setting. Like, honestly, in this book, I don't have great attachments to the other characters here. You know, we have Zellion, Sigzal, right? And Ox, who we didn't even know Ox before this book. But we understand what the relationship could be like between a Radiant and its their Spren. And we know, like, the importance and what, you know, that might have looked like to develop. And so it is very, you know, impactful to see that. This is, I've really been on my soapbox for a minute here, so I will go ahead and step down. But I just think that's really, really unique how Brandon was able to transfer that payoff to this book.
I've got to jump in there, because ever since I read chapter 45 until 3 minutes ago, I've been trying to figure out why Ox's death hit me so hard. It should not have. It was a character that we'd only known for 400 pages, as opposed to others that we'd know for 5,000 pages by now. And yet there's something about this moment that, like, hit me way more. I'm not a crier. I don't cry at books. Do I feel the emotions? Yeah, I do. This one, like, almost took me there. This one almost got, and it's this guy that we haven't even met that long. He's not even that funny, like he is, but you just explained it to me right there, Paul, with there's a wealth of knowledge I'm coming into this that's not even mentioned in this book, but that we just know by implication. We know that Sigzal and Auxiliary likely have a really deep relationship. They likely really understand each other extremely well. They've probably been through all kinds of challenges and journeys and, like, you name it. And so while this book doesn't even, like, talk about that kind of stuff, we can come into it with the weight of that bearing into this moment and have it mean so much more than what it might to, like, on the surface, on just a face value kind of thing. That is really interesting about what, like, the Cosmere as a whole can do. That seems like a really strong argument for what an interconnected Cosmere can deliver, is a moment like this that carries so much more in it than it would otherwise. Really, really cool. And thank you for explaining that, Paul, because that was a conundrum to me until 3 minutes ago.
Absolutely. This book has been where my wisdom has begun to shine. So
I really like the concept that this scene puts on me, the way I now interpret Spren, because Auxiliary makes the claim, I'm a Knight Radiant. I've made just as many decisions as you have. And we got that type of self-reliance in Rhythm of War, right? With Maya saying, we chose, you cannot take my sacrifice. Like, the Spren are way more involved than the Way of Kings would lead you to think. So with that, thinking of Spren as their own individual characters, not only like a Spren, if that makes sense, is a really cool concept for me moving into Wind and Truth, looking out for Pattern and Syl and, you know, the Stormfather as their own independent characters, not necessarily tied to their Knight Radiant, making their own decisions. I think that's really cool.
Should we talk about a certain piece of artwork?
Yeah. Should we talk about the lore around it too? I'm like, I understand it's a cool thing, but okay, why is that happening? That's really cool.
I really want to talk with you about this. Paul, hopefully you've seen this by now. Probably the most striking piece of artwork in this whole book, and definitely the most spoilery I was actually talking with Trevor off air a little bit about this. A lot of the art in this book is actually not spoilery. You could actually look at quite a bit of it ahead of reading it, and it wouldn't ruin anything. And then Trevor was like, oh yeah, except for that one. And I was like, oh yeah, well, okay, there is one, which is like the pinnacle moment of the whole book. Definitely do not flip to page 401 before you start this book. But yeah, this moment. Okay, so Ox has sacrificed himself to give Zellion enough investiture to get his powers of flight back. His armor reforms in the same moment. We got to talk about the armor here in a second.
Yeah.
He flies through the inferno of investiture towards the city of Beacon to save them. He's like in the sunlight, but the sunlight hasn't gotten to Beacon yet. They're stranded. The Cinder King has left them to die, but the sunlight has not gotten to them yet. So he's got to fly like faster than the dawn to get to them, save them. As he flies, he's like catching on fire, which his art does a fantastic job of showing. He's like fully on fire himself in his shard plate. And then in the air around him forms a glyph. And the description of the glyph is vague enough to where if there was not a piece of art, I bet there'd be some hot debate out there of what glyph just formed in the air behind him.
Yep.
But the artwork is very clear. And I did have to confirm, because I don't have all of those glyphs memorized, I did have to look it up. But it is undoubtedly in the artwork the symbol of the Skybreakers.
Yes. Not, thank you, Brandon. A Skybreaker we can be proud of.
Not the Windrunners. It's the Skybreaker symbol that forms. As he's flying to go protect the people, the Skybreaker symbol appears in the air around him. What is going on?
Okay. So here's my thing. The armor. Let's talk about the armor before we talk about the symbol. As he's deciding to go protect Beacon once again, his armor starts appearing around him. And that's actually what gives him away in the Skadrian stronghold. They're a little bit suspicious of him, the scientist lady or whatever. He successfully distracts her. And then Zellion's making, like, connecting the dots about the Sun Hearts and like, wait, I can go save them. And his armor starts appearing next to him, his Windrunner armor. And that's what gives him away. This is fascinating. So when in last episode, when he's protecting the last ship with the big shield, some of his Windrunner armor is reappearing near him. And it says, well, when he finally does get his shard plate in that picture you said, it says shard plate of combined of two separate orders. So both his Windrunner and his Skybreaker armor has combined to protect him here.
How does that work?
And it's specifically after he's made this promise to go protect Beacon. So that's the Windrunner part. The Skybreaker part is auxiliary. Auxiliary is giving him this armor. Auxiliary is giving him this emblazoned symbol in the sky. It's not that he's specifically tied to like the power of honor back on Roshar. It's that auxiliary is giving him the Skybreaker part now. Whether Zellion abandoned his oaths on as a Skybreaker, that remains to be like that's up for debate. But Zellion is returning to his Windrunner oaths of "I will protect." That's the Windrunner part. The Skybreaker part is auxiliary.
I did write in my live reaction a question: did Sanderson write this entire book just to give us poor Skybreaker Radiant quiz people someone to get behind, because up until now all we've had is Nail?
Yes, he did.
I do feel better. Thank you, Brandon.
All right, you got Seth, right? I'm jealous,
Paul. Don't start that. I hate to break it to you, but Seth is no hero. Okay,
come on, guys, you're being mean.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We got a whole Wind of Truth ahead of us. Hold your horses there, bros.
That's true. That's his book. So we'll come back. We'll reconvene.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm poking fun, of course.
Genuine question for you guys. So, Trevor, you mentioned the Skybreaker-ness is auxiliary. The Windrunner-ness is Zellion. Slightly putting words in your mouth. Is there an element of like Skybreaker action here? Honest question, not leading at all. I'm actually curious and trying to figure this out. Definitely he's moving to protect. There are people who are being bullied and taken advantage of by the Cinder King. Straight up just oppression, right? He's coming to protect them. Very Windrunner-y.
Yeah.
Is there an element of like justice or... I don't know quite the right word. It's hard to analyze a Skybreaker's, right? Because what we have to base off of is Nail. And Nail is certifiably insane. Like, yes. No doubt about it. Some of the stuff coming out of his mouth, maybe it's correct. At least half of it, I highly question.
Correct. As you should.
And Nail is very keyed in on this like letter of the law. Is it written in a document in the government of this land? Yes, okay, that's the right thing to do. No, okay, great, I can do whatever I want. That does not seem to apply to anything that's happening at all in this book, but is Nail just wrong? And that's not actually what Skybreakers are supposed to be about. Is there an element of like an injustice is happening in this moment and Zellion is the liberator? Zellion is the champion of the trod upon. Could that be an element of like Skybreaker-ness happening here? Genuine question. I don't know.
Yes, absolutely. So the tag or the second line or the second oath for Skybreakers, all Skybreakers, is I will seek justice. That has a lot of room for interpretation based on who's speaking. Like you just mentioned Nail. He's like insane and going after Knight Radiant for the first two books that we see him and wants to know about the letter of the law, blah, blah, blah. The second example we have is Zeth, who is also insane. Let me just throw that out there. And his whole thing is by the end of Rhythm of War, he's second, third ideal. I don't remember. Skybreaker. And his whole thing is I'm going to go cleanse Shinnevar. I'm going to go bring justice to Shinnevar. What does that mean? I don't know. We'll find out. But I will seek justice is such a like open for interpretation. Like I will protect those who cannot protect themselves is not like open for that much interpretation. I don't think that's pretty straightforward. I will seek justice. You could twist that all the way to what Nail's doing. Or you can interpret that to what Zellion is doing. There's something unjust happening. I will go seek justice. I will go save these people.
Regardless of where you fall, how you interpret what exactly is happening, this is such a cool moment and definitely feels like vindication for Skybreakers after years and years of mocking and looking down upon us. So this is our moment, Skybreakers. Arise.
Yeah, all you closet Skybreakers out there finally allowed to come out in the open. All right. Yes. So the mechanics of double shard plate aside, what is going on with Zellion? Like is it possible, let's say, All right, I'm going to say what I think happened with Zellion, just straight up. You guys have read as much as I have now. He gets to fourth ideal Windrunner, abandons his oaths for whatever reason. We can hypothesize about that all day. Abandons his Windrunner oaths, picks up a Dawn Shard, and then bonds. Yeah, I get confused here too, because Auxiliary, he specifically mentions he meets Auxiliary on a world that's not Roshar in this book. He's like, that there's a story that I'm going to tell you that's actually where I met Auxiliary, but he's not talking about Roshar, I think. Anyway, moving on. Let's say that Zellion was an order of two different Knights Radiant, which obviously was, at two different times. Could he then walk back to his Windrunner Oaths and become both? If he then begins to protect and have armor of both, that's weird.
It feels like that's what he's doing in this scene. There's a thought. Where is it? Shoot. There's a moment, it's not here, it's earlier, where he like tries to re-say an oath and Aux goes, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Where's that? That was a while back.
That was earlier on. I think that was like before, like we had our last episode. I think it was before that. The chapters between 2 and 26 or whatever we started.
Anyway, there's that moment where he like tries to re-say something and nothing happens. And Aux goes, yeah, you walked away from that, bro. You can't do that. But then here in this moment where he's making the decision, he's like acting out the oath of protecting.
I remember what it is. On the spaceship trying to get over the mountain, he needs to fly to go get the clamp. And he's like, I need to protect these people in the spaceship or in Beacon. And Auxiliary says, no, you can't do that. That's what it is.
Yes. Thank you. But then here we are. He does the action. He makes the big decision of, I'm going to potentially die and choose to not run to the next planet and stay here and fight and protect. And then his armor reforms. Isn't the armor like Spren? It's a Spren.
Yeah. Well, it's Wind Spren.
Yeah. His Spren or Wind Spren are with him, are here, have been here the whole time. Like, it really makes me want to pop over into Shadesmar and see, is there a Deadeye Honor Spren following him around?
Yeah.
Like,
or maybe not even it gets weird. It gets weird because you could argue that he walked away from his oaths as a Windrunner, but why? We just learned about anti-Stormlight. Did his Spren die and then he like turned his back as a Windrunner because he was bitter about his Spren dying or something like that? Or is there a Deadeye Windrunner Spren wandering, or whatever they're called?
Honor Spren?
Thank you. Honor Spren following him around.
My question with this is Sigsel like able to break the rules? We know there's some other things he can do, which like we know that Spren shouldn't really be able to, like, can't connect, like they're connected to Roshar, right? So is this him breaking the rules being unique because of the Dawn Shard interactions and this whole skip thing he's on? Or is this legitimate? That's the question I'm wrestling with right now. From what we've read, it makes me think that there is, in some way, shape, or form, a way to have multiple, I'm going to do air quotes, Spren. A way to have multiple Spren. It could be that they are not, like, you do not have a live Honor Spren and a live High Spren or Skybreaker Spren or whatever they're called. I don't know if, because if he has his live Windrunner Spren, I feel like at some point in this book we would see or hear something. Like we would get some nod, either like in this moment that it comes back, says something. I have no idea. So that makes me think that that Spren is gone. Even though that's not confirmed, I'm going to guess that. I'm going to like stand on that as my prediction, I guess. But this happening, is this a moment like, you know, even if the Spren is like a Deadeye Spren, there are moments where they can kind of hop in, like we see in Rhythm of War with Adolin. is that what's happening here? So he has auxiliary his live Skybreaker Spren, and he has his Deadeye Honor Spren, who is sort of coming to the rescue in a pivotal moment out of like the honorable thing that he is doing here. I feel like it could be that. Part of me, my instinct is just that, like, we haven't seen it yet, but that, yes, you can pseudo have two or more Spren. Maybe it takes a long time. Maybe there's a lot of weird things that have to happen. But I also feel like maybe that's not the case at all, and that Sigzil is just breaking a bunch of rules with this whole Dawn Shard situation.
Yes. The Dawn Shards break all the rules. Anything else on auxiliary? All right. The end of the book. We get Rebecca and Elegy, who kind of comes out of nowhere, I feel like, as a point of view character. And then where Zellion ends up at the end of the book. Elliot, I know you've been wanting to talk about Elegy. Why Elegy?
I almost feel like Elegy stole a bit of the spotlight here at the end of the book. We just had that, what I think is going to become an iconic moment from Zellion. We just, and auxiliary, we just talked about it. But then there's still 4 chapters to go to end the book after that.
6. 51 yeah. chapters, right? 6 chapters?
Yeah. Yeah, 52. So... quite a bit of book to go. And a large part of that is Elegy. We get Elegy perspectives, which I wasn't ready for that. We've been in Nomad's head this entire book. And then all of a sudden, boom, we jump over to Elegy for a couple of chapters, which was interesting. And then there's this really cool scene between Rebecca and Elegy, where Elegy goes to save her. She's being turned into a chard with these, what do they call them? Cinder hearts or cinder something?
Yeah, cinder hearts.
Yeah, cinder hearts, yeah.
And they like, the people that are doing it, they touch the spear to Rebecca, and the process like starts, and Elegy is able to tear her away in that moment. So she's like half charred? She's like medium well? No. Medium rare?
Rare.
Rare. Something like that. She's not like deformed. She doesn't. Trevor, really, you hated that metaphor, didn't you?
That's one of my favorites. I support this.
I didn't hate it immediately, but then I thought about it a little bit longer, and I was like, "Yeah, that's horrible."
I apologize. No, it was pretty bad.
Don't apologize.
The Cinderheart itself like fuses to her, but doesn't completely like replace all of her. So she's still herself, but she's somehow connected. And I almost want to use like a little C connected there. Like she's like kind of sort of synced up to the Cinder King and all of his charred people. So they then have some weird scenes where like they're walking through the city and all the charred ignore them. They're like, oh yeah, you're part of the system, the hive mind, you know, you're on the good team. But she still has all of her faculties and her memories and her thoughts. And so then they can kind of work together still to try and save the day. What was your guys' take on the scene? Because I actually found it pretty moving.
Didn't hit me hard, I'll be honest. I didn't really care about Elegy.
Man, harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trevor, that's extremely harsh. I felt the same way. I didn't have any attachment to Elegy particularly. It was neat. Like, I think it was a good moment, but that wasn't the like big moment for me. For me, the big moment was probably with auxiliary. And this was kind of like, yeah, okay, cool. Someone else. Cool stuff.
If there was anyone to underserve a supporting character, I knew Paul would back me up.
You know me too well, Trevor.
I can't believe the two of you, both of you are going to hard pass on the Elegy moment here at the end.
It's not that I hard pass on it. It's that nothing can top what just happened with auxiliary.
Fair.
The book is obviously over.
Fair.
So why are we still reading?
Good question. Good question. Which is why maybe I actually build something in this moment because I was ready for the book to be done. I was thinking, oh, okay, now we move into epilogues. And then kind of out of the blue comes this other moment where I guess I've kind of felt something for Elegy's character progression a little bit here because it's kind of an interesting one. Elegy is a little bit of a blank slate. Not completely a blank slate because she has this influence that she's trying to work for, but she has a legacy. All these people like owe their survival to her. She was they have a name for it. Lodestar?
Yeah, Lodestar. I actually looked this up. They name Zellion because Zellion was the first Lodestar.
Oh, on yeah. The planet that like brought them from Threnody. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me go give you a little spiel on this, but keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So Elegy is like the inspirational leader of these people, but Elegy is no longer that Elegy. So, which this whole conversation is actually really weird when you think about Elegy as the name of a song. So, like the new song is not the old song. But Elegy now has this legacy that she's kind of torn between, do I try to live up to the old me who is not me anymore, or do I just try and find something new? And that's a really interesting question. And she has some cool conversations with Zellion about purpose, which I really liked. Zellion is going, you have an opportunity here. You have a blank slate. You don't have to worry. You don't have to be weighed down by any of your past. You get to choose right now who you're going to be. You get to choose right now what you're going to pursue, who you are. And she has this huge negative influence of the Cinder King weighing on her. She has this desire for violence. And she has to kind of push through that to figure out, how do I live? And to have this moment where she's inspired by Rebecca's leadership, I thought was pretty cool. Man. So people out there, hop in the comments and back me up here, or throw me under the bus. I guess that's fine too, but give me some love out there. Anybody else out there feeling for Elegy? Cause my co-hosts here apparently have hearts of icicles.
I mean, I'm not going to deny the heart of icicles. However, I mean, I'm middle of the road. I think it was good for this book, but I'm not like, oh my gosh, no, Elegy, you know?
Oh, third favorite character, easy, by like a mile. There are three characters I care about in this book, and Elegy's the third.
I was going to say, what, three characters out of five? Like, that's not fair. High.
Well, yeah.
Count the Cinder King and
Zeal.
Whichever one of the greater good you can remember the name of.
Contemplation.
Notably, Rebecca, actually. I find Elegy way more interesting than Rebecca. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even respect Rebecca's name, so...
Yeah, I do refuse to say her name correctly, although I straight up just think the audiobook is doing it wrong. I'm sorry.
That's fair. I definitely understand the sentiment. After seeing how it was spelled, I'll give you some cred on that.
Anything else? Before we get to our epilogues. We've got a couple things to talk about our epilogues.
Well, we probably should talk briefly... Maybe it's pretty straightforward. The final duel between Zellion and the Cinder King. He gets strapped with a metal mind that just slows him down. There's a couple of different ways you could do that, right? Just increases his mass, I guess. We've seen Sazed do that all the time.
Yeah.
So slows him down. Hard to fight. Cinder King's winging. What a bully. Zellion pushes him off the ship and then like has a moment where he's like, hang on a second. You've got a lot of investiture. I'm now connected to this planet and this people. I can trade heat with people. How about I just have a contest of wills with you? And you're going to try and suck my heat out. Well, I'm just going to turn around and suck it all right back out of you. And he does that. And
Because he's now a child of Canticle. Mm-hmm. So now he can do that.
Which is really neat. I I was kind of chuckling internally a second ago. I was like, man, we've been talking about these chapters for a while, and we haven't gotten to the moment where Sigsel defeats the Cinder King, you know? And it is, I say this jokingly now, because it is like the last, I mean, it's like that happens and then the book is over. Like, it's like the last page or something. And I thought that was interesting and pretty funny, but it was like it was a dramatic, like everything is coming to a head, and then it's just a mic drop from Sigsel. He sucks his energy out and then hits his skip capacity, bounces instantly, the end.
I
still have the epilogue, but like, you know, the end of the story.
I will say Brandon rarely misses on an epic one-liner comment, but this is one of them. He says, "Enjoy your first sunrise," Zellion whispered. "It will be the best one you've seen in your entire life."
I thought it was cool.
You got to cut the second part. Just say,
okay.
Enjoy your first sunrise, and then Zellion like disappears.
That would be way better. No, it's fine. The whole thing is good. Here's why. That's something Ox would say.
Why?
Think of it that way. It that's what Auxiliary does. He goes that he says too much. He says his joke, but then he overexplains it, and it like that's his thing. This is Zellion like delivering a line for his friend. It's cheesy, it's goofy, but it's a callback to Auxiliary.
I did not think about that. I have to give props.
You saved it for me, I guess.
You're welcome.
Trevor's reluctant, but like understanding on this, and I think that's very funny. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Just like in a movie sense, they lock eyes, and he's like, "Enjoy your first sunrise," and then he like disappears. That'd be way better than like.
It is. You're right. They did sacrifice the movie mic drop moment for this significance. If that do you think that is really that intentional? Because he doesn't make mention. That is essentially guessing or hinting at that.
Oh,
I mean, that seems pretty legitimate.
Yeah,
definitely guessing. I don't think it says that. I'm completely reading that into it. That was my take on it. That was overly cheesy, but that Auxiliary is overly cheesy. And so for me, that was that. And the way to do that in a movie, the way you'd have to do that if you want to try and make that reference, is he'd have to somehow say it the way Auxiliary talks. It'd have to be like obvious that it's a reference to Auxiliary, which that alone might come off flat in a movie.
It'd be tough. Say in a movie, I feel like that would be pretty difficult to convey that significance specifically. You could definitely have the mic drop moment. You could definitely have Sigsel thinking back to his good ally Auxiliary, but it'd be hard to be like him trying to mimic Auxiliary's phrasing, unless it was something really specific, like Ersic Lowlander or something like that. You know, he didn't have much of a catchphrase, but he did have like a way of talking, you know.
Unless he called him like his valet or something like that.
Oh,
he could say, "Enjoy your first sunrise," the Knight Radiant says with dramatic irony or something like that, and then zips away. I'd go for that.
And then after all of that, the sunrise hits and Zellion just skips off world and is gone forever. Never to return.
True.
Yeah.
He's on the run from the Night Brigade, which we get a point of view of the Night Brigade, if ever so briefly. What do you guys think of our spaceship hopping antagonists, maybe?
I thought this was neat, and I thought it was nice that they kind of we get the sense that the Night Brigade have sort of lost Sigsel's trail here, right? They've kind of they can't directly track him from here. They think that he's the one who died, right? Like that's where they're left thinking. And I feel like that is really nice for me as the reader to be like, okay, you know, Sigsel was like his hope, his kind of like dream scenario is to buy himself some time, maybe some time to just rest for a moment or something like that. And I feel like it doesn't show the unfortunate part of Sigsel doesn't necessarily know he's not being followed at the moment, or that it might be difficult for them to follow him. But it is nice to get that confirmation of like they don't have their they might not be following him after this. Maybe he'll get a moment's rest at some
right point. On his peaceful tranquil beach with dead auxiliary.
Yes. Yeah. Bittersweet.
The nugget I took out of the Night Brigade perspective was the fact that they have shades on their team.
They do.
Like, not off in the forest murdering everyone, not locked in a jar 3D printing stuff for them. Like, in uniform, on their team, can send them after you, shades.
Yeah.
Which, from what we've seen, I think that's a little bit scary. I don't know that we know quite fully what those things are possible, like capable of, but based on the context of this book and the really long title that I can never remember.
Shadows of Silence and Force of Hell.
That one. Those things could be like super effective against a lot of people. You can't, you know, they're dead. You can't kill them. You can't take them down. This is powerful, invested magic thing that apparently only is repelled by silver or something, if I'm remembering my other story correctly.
Silver, or I bet anti-light would work against them too.
Yeah.
So anyway, Night Brigade have ghost mercenaries. Watch out.
Watch your back, Zellian. Yeah. And then Zellian wakes up on a beach, and I believe the term Shodel is referenced. Am I crazy? It's like the last line of the book. The people crewing it turned out to be Shodel, of all things. He hadn't known there were any enclaves of them off Yolen. Which, have you guys seen Shodel before? Do you remember anything?
Yes.
Where?
We have seen Shodel in at least one, maybe two places. Maybe more. Probably more that I've missed. The one I can remember by name is in one of the many epilogues of the seven? Lost Metal.
Yes.
Yeah, there are way too many epilogues in that book. Shoot, who is it? Milan is off traveling Shadesmar with a Shodel buddy. And they're like referenced there in that scene as like, oh yeah, they know a lot. They're good guides. The other mention that's coming to my mind, which maybe I've crossed my wires and thought of something different. Yumi, spoilers for Yumi. At the end of Yumi, is this Elliot's epilogue material as well?
Elliot's on it.
I did not even copy mine this, which I have been starting to do more and more of that now that I am a Cosmere Current. But I did remember at the end of Yumi, they launch a rocket, a literal rocket, that planet, which I can never remember the name of that planet.
Kimisha, or something like that.
Okay, something. They're like just arriving on, you know, space age technology. They launch a rocket. They fly up to, it's either a moon or like another planet that's around them. And they discover these like four armed beings that are on that planet. I think it doesn't say that and there in that chapter, I don't think, but aren't those Shodel as well?
They are. They are vaguely human, fairy like four armed guys. Yes. The sister planet for Kimisha, I don't remember. The Yumi planet has Shodel on it, who are apparently from Yolen. And then, wherever Sigzil has just skipped off to. They've got a sailboat of Shodel, and then you're right, at the end of The Lost Metal, Milan has a Shodel cognitive shadow, or not cognitive, cognitive realm guide buddy. There you go. Some Yolen future species that we'll, I'm sure, learn about at some point.
I'm now kind of taking them as like the spirit wayfarers of the Cosmere. They're like the, I have no context for this. I'm completely making it up, but I'm taking them as like the mystical guides of the Cosmere. Like you stumble across them, they're like, ooh, let me show you to my guru who will guide you through the ways of the Cosmere. No context for that at all, but that's my headcanon.
Fabulous.
Maybe we'll find out in a upcoming book more about what they're actually like.
Anything else for these final chapters of The Sunlit Man?
That's all I got in my notes. This was a ride. This was a crazy, in all the right ways, book. It was shorter for a Brandon Sanderson novel, but there was so much packed into it that it was a very efficient use of the page space. We went a lot of places. We had a lot of big discussions in a relatively short amount of time and had some big moments that we talked about it here in this chapter, had a lot of weight that more than 400 pages can deliver. It was a good ride.
Yeah, I want to say thanks to y'all, because I don't think reading this book on my own would have had anywhere near the same effect. I think our other books have been much, much easier to pick apart, to digest. This one was a bit more going on, a bit more subliminal. There's a lot of stuff. That, and of course, want to say thank you to our listeners and people who've been commenting and chatting in the Discord and things like that, because it's easy, especially audiobook. Maybe I've gotten too used to Michael Kramer, but it was difficult for me to adjust to a new audiobook reader and to try to pick up on all the little minute mentions and details in this book.
Sounds good. All right. Our dedicated listeners, we have finished, which means we have some itinerary to discuss as we close this episode. You will get a Sunlit wrap-up episode either tomorrow or next week. We'll figure out which one that is. And then we are going to do some general Cosmere, very laid-back, zoomed-out content episodes between now and Wind and Truth. And then we are going to have a couple Wind and Truth episodes back to back as the book releases. So prepare for that as we prepare for Wind and Truth in full swing. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Owen.
Thank you.
Lovely, and see you next week.